You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 19th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the set of CNN's People's Front of Judea Party Town Hall meeting, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Happy anniversary, darling.
I guess it says something about our marriage and our life that I take for granted that we're going to be married forever. So when we podcast for 5 years or 300 episodes or whatever it is, that's a huge big deal.
350, baby. 350.
Is this 350 this time?
Hey, this is our 350th episode.
Oh, see, that's a bigger deal.
Yeah. Anniversary, schmanniversary. It's
huge.
350. Yeah.
But we are so glad to be here and to be able to talk with you about this crazy, crazy week again. Every week seems crazier than the last. Those of our listeners, and I mentioned Steve in Manhattan because he and I have been exchanging emails about he and his partner are looking for apartment space and comparing prices and realizing that, you know, for the price of what he's going to get, let's say a 600 square foot apartment in Manhattan, he could have a 16,000 foot square house on a golf course here in Springfield.
Yeah.
But just talking about living in a cornfield, in that the headline of the paper yesterday, did you see that?
I did.
Was about the record was broken. A world record was broken. In that the highest price for a steer, S-T-E-E-R, in the history of the Illinois State Fair, $104,000 for one cow, one bull.
One sweet-ass bull, my friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that's got to be for breeding at that price. You're not going to slaughter that bull and eat it for steaks at $104,000.
We are keenly aware of how blessed we are compared to the residents of Louisiana.
Yeah. Or
10 feet of water.
Or, you know, Syria. I mean.
Yeah. No, we're not.
Everyone is.
Comparing and contrasting.
Our hearts are with that poor child who, you know, was rescued from his building yesterday. And just I think the whole world is crying for him. So.
It was Republican Day yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at the fair. Yes.
Fair.
Yes. They called it Governor's Day. They didn't call it Republican Day.
Yeah, we don't want to mention.
And because they called it Democrat Day, they used to call it Democratic Day. Now they call it Democrat Day. I think there's some politics going in on that.
Yeah, knock yourself out. Go right ahead. As I was rolling through my work day yesterday, I rolled past the hotel and there was a big Mark Kirk rally.
I heard about that, and he says that the big problem. You know what the problem is? Did you see that in the paper?
No.
The problem with Illinois is that big unions are running the state.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. Yep. I'm sure he'd get a lot of Republicans agreeing with him.
Oh, yeah, sure. The governor agrees with him. So.
Absolutely. But you couldn't really hear the sound of the speech he was making over the sound of the tears falling in the cheeks of everyone into their beers going, we're going to lose so bad.
We're going to lose so bad.
My God, we're going to lose
just,
so
not bold. Just the presidency, but this particular Senate race is going to be just...
Yeah, Mark Kirk is toast.
Mark Kirk is going to lose to Tammy Duckworth, and that's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen. The last time that people were looking down the road going, oh, this is a beatdown, was Barack Obama taking on Alan Keyes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, downstate Republicans were voting for Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
That's lopsidedly weird it was. So.
Yep. Hey, we need to focus now. We've been
focus.
Just, I'm needing the focus here. Happy anniversary.
Yes.
And we got that done. We're going to talk today about a lot of things, but I think, Driftglass, that we should start with Breitbart.
Yeah, kind of have to.
Okay. So Donald Trump, he never gets tired of doubling down, does he?
Oh, why would he? There's no down like double down, honey. I think he's broken a law of nature. Now, I might be wrong about this, but I believe it is a universally acknowledged rule that no object in the universe can be folded more than 12 times.
Yes, that's right.
I believe he has broken that record. I believe he has doubled down his own unbelievably fuck-up approach to politics the 13th time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've entered a new era of post-physics politics where all things are possible. Because, why would you not put your entire campaign in a blender 3 months before the elections and just put on puree? Ah, screw it. We're making margaritas for everybody. And
he gave his campaign to Breitbart.
He did. He handed them. Well, there's a guy named Steve Sykes.
Right.
Who is who is one of those conservatives who has sort of come halfway to Jesus.
He's a conservative radio host in
Wisconsin.
Okay.
And a never Trump guy. And much like many people who have found themselves on this yellow brick road, at some point it starts becoming impossible for him to walk back.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't come out and said, "Oh, holy shit, liberals are right all along." But he has come awfully close to saying, "Look, we on the right worked the refs so hard and taught people so well to ignore anyone who wasn't telling us what we wanted to hear that we made a monster."
Mm-hmm.
We made a monster. We made a party that won't listen to anything, no matter how factual it is,
mm-hmm.
and won't accept judgments on their opinions, no matter how ludicrous they are,
right.
from anybody.
So when CNN says water is wet, well, that's just mainstream media.
What do you?
You know, and they will not believe what is in front of their own eyes, right?
And he's just shitting himself because, and so this week, despite the fact that I have major issues with people like that, because he wants Ted Cruz instead. They're all crazy.
That is it. Yep.
But he did say that the Trump campaign has entered the hospice phase.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants those who are near and dear to him close by.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump gets his ideas, his opinions, and his political facts from, as we've mentioned before, crazy places. Alec Jones, who bragged this week that Donald Trump, it just blew his mind.
Yeah.
That Donald Trump is getting his information straight from us. He's quoting us chapter and verse. And Breitbart, which is a giant open retching sewer of a racist pest hole,
mm-hmm.
and Gateway Pundit.
Yeah.
The entire, the absolute dregs of the right-wing media is now personified and running for president.
But see, to me, Driftglass, the fact that Breitbart was in the news again this week is a further illustration that Kurt Vonnegut is in heaven writing what's happening for all of us.
Yeah.
Because we are really going through a period of deeply intense karma, where every single thing that ever happened on the right is coming home to roost, no matter how small. And so Twitter and Salon and a lot of websites yesterday had to really review who Andrew Breitbart is and what did he do and why is that bad. And you got the sense that it was time, there's been enough time for a reasonable assessment of who Andrew Breitbart is. And as I said on Twitter, one person said on Twitter that, the media is talking about this Breitbart news guy got to be the head of the Trump campaign, but they're not talking about why is that a bad thing. And I said, well, the cable news media needs to be able to tell you both sides. And when you talk about Andrew Breitbart's legacy, there's only one side.
Yeah.
He's an awful person.
He was an awful person. He was an evil person. Yep. He ran a really despicable site that has only gotten worse since he died.
And he did it for money.
He did? Yeah. Yep.
And when he died, it was very sudden and unexpected. I mean, it was unexpected from the standpoint of he was young. I'm sure his doctor was probably, if he was going to the doctor, was telling him, you're killing yourself, because clearly he was a rage monster and drank and had stress issues and so forth. But it was still very unexpected and a surprise when he died. And the reaction when he died was, okay, if we really tell the truth about this person, he destroyed lives and
for
money and for his career. And we really can't say this. So let's talk about the fact that he had four kids. And, you know, isn't it a tragedy that this young father with young children passed away? And now that there's, and my reaction at the time was, you mean he had kids and he behaved that way?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He screamed at Occupy protesters that they were rapists out in public with cameras running. And not just once. Yeah.
Waded into them, screaming at the top of his lungs. At CPAC, screaming, you know, stop raping people, stop raping. And he just wouldn't shut up about it. He was drunk. Mm-hmm. And he was the most insufferable prick you could possibly imagine. And he had a giant megaphone. Remember the Potato Day thing?
Yeah, yeah.
From Jon Stewart?
Uh-huh.
That was him.
Yeah.
That was Andrew Breitbart making a big deal about, they used to call it St. Patrick's Day. And now it's called Potato Day. And that's just fascism on the face of it. And again, not that any lunatic on the subway wouldn't say such a thing, but for some reason, he was a lunatic, a hateful rage monster lunatic who got lots of people to give him money and give him a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And he aggregated. And one of the worst hacks on the right in Illinois is his pal, was his pal. There's a picture of him and his, because he had all these acolytes. James O'Keefe got his start on the Breitbart site. Slandering Shirley Sherrod was, and this is all while he was alive.
Yeah, Acorn. Acorn was before Shirley Sherrod. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he's famous for. And that philosophy is now the guiding principle of Donald Trump's presidential campaign.
Right.
And really, the market has spoken, because the question was always about open running right-wing sewers like this. Why are they there? Well, they're there to serve a need.
Yeah.
There are 20 or 25 or 30 million Americans who will not believe anything unless it comes shitting out of that website. And they go there as if it's they pay a daily visit there. It's their Bible. Mm-hmm. And,
well, that gets to the point of what I want to talk about today in terms of a theme, which is that the right-wing political system in our country has become completely faith-based. And it's based not on any scientific reality. It's based on what you believe to be true. And you only believe to be true what you want to believe to be true. I showed you a post I wrote today called Wingnuts Lose It.
Yeah.
As fake PPP poll shows 74% Florida lead for Trump. And this was a parody. It turns out it was a parody of a PPP poll result that had on it, you know, private, internal restricted access, Florida eyes only, you know, all these top secret kind of warnings at the top, which will get you right away. You know, you're not supposed to see this.
Ooh, must be true.
You know, and someone posted it to Scribd. And so it showed, Trump has 74% of the vote total in Florida. And this poll also said that 94% of Democrats expect Donald Trump to win the presidency. 94%.
Yeah, it's our dirty secret. We don't talk about it much in public, but terrible truth.
And this woman on Twitter, Susan, we'll just call her Susan, kept tweeting to the PPP poll people saying, will you confirm or deny that this poll is true?
Mm-hmm.
And because they wouldn't deny it.
Because they're having too much fun messing with
her. They're having too much fun. And they said, I'm not going to bother denying it because I want y'all to waste as much energy being outraged about it as possible.
Yeah.
And at that point, she says, well, if you will not deny its authenticity, that's a story.
No, because I believe they said something like, thank you for being everything we thought about the Trump people come to life.
Right. Bless you. You are like one of our polls about Trump supporters come to life.
Yeah. Just.
And then it turns out that at the bottom of this actual document on Scribd that she was referring to.
This parody poll.
This parody poll that she is pointing to and saying, is this real or not? They criticize Quinnipiac for smoking Bernie grade weed.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
And, as I said in my post, they neither confirm nor deny that they are smoking Martin O'Malley grade weed, right?
And here's the thing. Her name is Susan?
Susan.
Susan can't read anything if it isn't in all caps, honey.
Well, exactly.
So it's not fair.
If it doesn't fall under the category of this is the super secret information that confirms that we're right and everyone else is wrong, which is the daily spewing of Alex Jones and Breitbart and Gateway Pundit and these right-wing blogs that are in business to tell the right-wing base exactly what they want to hear.
Now,
and Fox News is part of that.
Now, here's the thing. I can confirm this by independent observation.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that Susan is all indignant about this one poll. I found the evidence of my truth. You can take that denial. You can take the actual fact that it's a parody and it's a joke. And, oh, my God, who could possibly be dumb enough to believe this?
Right.
And you can pry her eyes open, Clockwork Orange style.
Right.
And force her to watch the people who actually parodied it say, it's a joke. We made it up. It isn't real. And you can do that 100 times and she still won't believe it because she is mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Conservatism used to be an ideology. Now it really is a mental illness.
Well, and Susan confirms what the talk radio host said because she kept trying. She kept claiming that she was making no claim about these polls. She said, I'm not saying it's legit. I'm saying that PPP polls will not deny it, and that's the story.
Right.
So the media, institutional media is always lying to you. That's my position. And that's exactly what Steve Stearns, is that right? Is that his name?
Steve Sykes.
Oh, Steve Sykes said, which is, we have developed and cultivated a population of conservatives who refuse to believe facts if they are sourced by a mainstream person.
By anybody who doesn't agree with them.
Right.
Because the way you become a, the way you go from being a trusted conservative news source to a liberal, lefty, liberal, commie squish is by telling Susan something she doesn't want to hear.
Yep.
And then you go on that list. And the number of times I have had people tell me, well, Peggy Noonan, she's just a crazy liberal, lefty, liberal, or people like that. I said, no, she's a fucking speechwriter for Ronald Reagan. She was a, they reverse engineer their stupid racist ideas into what those people who oppose them must be.
Yeah.
And the only vocabulary they have is you're either with us or you're a crazy liberal, lefty, liberal, commie dupe. And the world is divided into those two parts. And if it were only that, that scum at the bottom of the American gene pool, then this would not be a problem. There'd be, you know, 13 to 15 million morons who would vote for any, you know, fascist who comes along and waves his dick in their face. That's fine. But the people who are one and two and three layers above them, who are the smart people, who are the trusted people, who are the serious people, the people who actually get on camera. Susan will never be on television. But you know who is on television? Joe Scarborough's on television.
Yeah.
And
Bill Kristol's
on
television. Exactly.
And there was this little exchange. You mind if I talk about this for a minute?
No, go right ahead.
This week, in fact, it was just a couple of days ago. First of all, Bill Kristol is a lying traitor who has no business being on television. So when these two brain wizards sat down to chat about Breitbart, it was surreal because they were really angry and disappointed that Donald Trump would campaign over to this Steve Bannon guy, who is the president, CEO, whatever, of Breitbart News.
Who is responsible for calling Bill Kristol a renegade Jew.
Renegade Jew, Bill Kristol. So, and is responsible for so many other awful things.
Yeah.
All of which Donald Trump believes, which is why he hired this clown. But the real texture comes from the fact that we might mock Susan for lying about, you know, obvious things that everyone knows she's lying about because she's stupid and she's a conservative and that's who she is. But watching these two guys just lie as well. The things all have in common is they all lie all the time because they really can't do anything else. They have to keep reality at bay. So Susan wants to keep at bay the fact that Donald Trump is going to lose badly. Okay.
Yep.
Bill Kristol and Joe Scarborough want to keep at bay the fact that that the Breitbart site was always an open sewer.
Right.
Always a shithole. So
Andrew Breitbart liked it that way. In other words, speaking ill of the dead, which we are doing here.
Yeah.
And I think that was something that had to happen. Again, I think we had to get to this point. This is why I think Kurt Vonnegut is writing our story as we go along from the clouds, is we had to get back to the truth about who Andrew Breitbart was.
Yes.
And I don't think that, you know, I know you and I disagree about this. That's I don't think anyone lacks redeemability. Uh-huh. People can be redeemed. But Andrew Breitbart passed this mortal coil before he reached that point.
Yes, he did. So all right. Rather than say, holy shit, these people have been a horror, a blight on our community all this time, because if that's true, then Joe Scarborough has been a parasite who's been leeching off of them and making money by pandering to them all this time. Bill Kristol has been an equally parasitic organism, leeching off of them, feeding them lies, and sucking in their money and their votes all this time. So we can't admit that. Mm-hmm. We can't admit that there's always been a problem with the Republican Party and that these two scumbags are the profiteers who profit off of stupid, angry people who believe crazy things. Instead, we need to pretend that Trumpism is a thing that just happened a few years ago. And so rather than admit that the Breitbart open sewer is part of a continuum of hateful nonsense that Bill Kristol is on and Joe Scarborough is on, they're all on. It's their gravy train. It's wing nut welfare, as we call it. They have to pretend that Breitbart, and they were lamenting that, you know, he used to be such a good site. Andrew, and this is, I'm actually quoting Bill Kristol directly now. I knew Andrew well, and he was a troublemaker, but he was a good-hearted person who would not have, I mean, I hate the fact that it's called Breitbart News.
Yep.
It's unfortunate that we're all sitting around talking about Breitbart. It's a disservice to Andrew's memory, Kristol said, while remarking that the website under Bannon had been pretty successful from a business point of view. Okay, yeah. So there were the good old days when Andrew Breitbart was alive and well, and it was a fun-loving, humane site that didn't, you know, pander to racists and unleash massive life-destroying waves of bullshit across the media.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's mm-hmm. what Bill Kristol needs to believe in order to avoid going into his basement and blowing his brains out.
Yep.
That's the past he needs to sell to the schmucks at MSNBC who keep putting him on the air. That's what he needs to tell MSNBC so that Phil Griffin will keep sucking his dick.
Yep.
But the last sentence was the most purely perfect thing I've heard Bill Kristol say in a long time. He really does want the new Breitbart site brought down a few pegs and suggests that someone should go look at all the things they've said.
Maybe some people should go and look at all the things that Bill Kristol has said.
And I wrote on my blog, I'm going to have to sit with that remark for a long time.
A long time.
Because yep. going to look at all the things people say is if the liberal blogosphere could be said to have one mission, it has been, please, for fuck's sake, go look at what Bill Kristol actually said.
Yep.
And by the same token, the entire Beltway establishment, if it could be said to obey one mission, one all-encompassing commandment, it is, absolutely do not look at what people say. Don't mm-hmm. look at what they say on Twitter. Don't look at what they say on their own sites. Don't look at what they say yesterday. For God's sakes, don't ask what Newt Gingrich was doing last week. Just put them on the air, treat them with respect, because we're all criminals. We're all part of this conspiracy. And watching this revision of the actual facts of the Breitbart world through Bill Kristol and Joe Scarborough talking like liberal bloggers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If only people would dig into this, they'd see that those people are crazy and mean. I just, you know, again, and that's why they are kept away from everyone else. That's why nobody, everyone on that panel that they were all going around and around on, every single one of them was frantically trying to find a way to draw a bright line in the sand. This is before 2010.
Right.
The Republican Party was fine.
Right.
After
right.
2010. After these awful people took over Breitbart, after the Tea Party went off the rails, that's when everything went wrong. Because that's
and they have to draw that line, because if they don't, then in January of 2017, they're totally screwed.
Yeah.
And they know it. And by the way, that Breitbart guy now has access to the Republican National Committee data.
Yep.
And so he's a Republican. He's got the Republican Party data in his hands. And his campaign staff, you know, his candidate is getting security briefings, such as they are.
Yep.
So that's happening. And you cannot separate. Reince Priebus went to a Trump campaign and told the crowd that everything's fine. this week. This week. Not 3 months ago. Not before Breitbart. Not before Gold Star Father. Not before all of these crazy things, you know, as we've said, not before the 12th and 13th fold in the doubling down.
Right.
This week went before a crowd and said everything's fine.
Yeah. Well, what
this is the
say?
Republican Party. I keep saying you can't call it Trumpism. You can't call it movement conservatism. You mm-hmm. can't call it Breitbartism. This is the Republican Party.
Yeah.
This is Joe Scarborough's party. This is Bill Kristol's party. This is they are all part of it, and they're all responsible for it.
And
it,
as you said, it really is faith based.
Yeah.
In the sense that it all depends. Joe Scarborough's job and Bill Kristol's job and their stand and all of the filthy bastards like them all depend completely on the willingness of all of their colleagues and all of their employers, all the corporations that pay them huge amounts of money to completely go along with the lie.
Mm-hmm.
That we're all, this is a conspiracy. We're not going to talk about what we did yesterday. And they just proceed as if Joe Scarborough never spent a year coddling Donald Trump, that Bill Kristol hasn't been wrong about everything his entire fucking career. And again, it's legitimate to do that if you're a crazy person and you live under a bridge. And that's unfortunate, but some people are like that. It is an absolute sign that the media is completely rotten, mm-hmm. right down to the pylons, where you're allowed to put these people on television and have them go completely unchallenged.
Yeah.
That your entire business model is put right-wing lying assholes on TV and make sure nobody asks no tough questions.
Yeah.
Because once you start asking, you know, once you allow Martin Luther anywhere near the cathedral, shit starts hitting the fan.
Yeah.
You start asking questions about how come all these corrupt assholes control the keys to the kingdom? And how come all and the flip side of that is and I asked Charlie Sykes this. I don't expect an answer. I asked everybody this on the Twitter. When there's an email address, I ask them via email. It's always the same question. And if I had Joy Reid to talk to, who I respect a lot, or Chris Hayes, I'd ask the same thing. Look, in 1994, Rush Limbaugh was being applauded as the savior of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich was teaching Republicans, always say traitor, always say liar. Whenever you're in front of a microphone, denigrate, slander, and slash Democrats over and over and over again. Never stop. Just keep pounding away and pounding away. Use the government as a means for political retribution. And fuck shutting the government down. Who cares? Who cares if this thing works as long as they have power? That was 22 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So for 22 fucking years, we on the longer than that, honestly, people on the left have been saying, this day is coming. You're tampering mm-hmm. with the ugliest and darkest, most primal forces in human nature. And there will come a reckoning.
Well, and there will come a reckoning because, first of all, there is no intellectual basis for that. And it will collapse from its own weight eventually. Mm-hmm. But also, demography is against you.
Yeah.
Big time. And if you're going to be a white nationalist party, your future is so limited. And I wanted to read something, if you don't mind, Ian Millhiser's Twitter stream. I read this to you the other day.
Yeah.
He is an editor at Think Progress, and he had a Twitter storm about Trump and Bannon, the guy from Breitbart.
Uh-huh.
Trump's fully embracing the aggressive nationalism that's woven deep into his campaign. As a political matter, that's the sort of strategy that makes sense only if you think, and I would say believe, that Trumpian nationalists make up a majority or at least a sufficient plurality to win an election. So you believe that your white supremacist Republicans are the real majority in America, and
yes.
they're just silent. And you know,
yes.
the Trump signs say silent majority. And he says, you know, that's just not true. They're 32% of the electorate at best. But there is this sense among Republicans of, no, we're the silent majority, we're the moral majority, we're, you know, the real Americans, we're the core. And part of that is geographic, that they live in areas where it is all white.
Yeah. It's all them.
It's all them. He says, as a side note, the real losers here are Paul Ryan and the burn Medicare to the ground Republicans.
Yeah.
that there are factions within the GOP's internal struggle, and they've lost because Breitbart has taken over the campaign of the Republican nominee. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where I disagreed with Ian Millhiser a little bit. He said, Paul Ryan is the candidate of rich GOP donors and absolutely no one else.
Right.
But the thing is, there were 15 Paul Ryans on the stage of the Republican debate. They were all candidates of rich GOP donors.
Yes, they all, absolutely.
I might make an exception for the governor of Ohio, whose name I...
Kasich.
Yeah. You know, Kasich tried to run a feel-good campaign and failed. And then he talked about Democrats versus Republicans. And this is what I thought was really interesting. The Republican Party is constantly lurching from one first set of first principles. It'll be cruel libertarianism this week, white nationalism next week. And the dominant faction demands that the members of the GOP coalition line up behind whoever the dominant ideologist is. The Democrats assemble a looser coalition of ideological liberals, ethnic interest groups, single issue groups, women, you know, unions, whatever. And they decide as a coalition among partners how everyone should be satisfied with the party's ultimate goals. And again, this is where I kind of disagree with him, because this is where it is. We are constantly in a state of family fight, right?
Yeah.
And that's... That is the old joke about Democrats and cats in the alley. You think they're fighting like hell, they're actually making more cats.
Yeah.
You know, that we are always in a constant state of struggling with each other over principles. But what happens in a, he says, the Democratic Party, because of that, is actually a healthy party. When the Bernie Sanders supporters lose the primaries, they're welcome to the table.
Right.
When the Trump supporters win the primaries, the Ted Cruz comes to the convention and says, vote your conscience.
Yeah.
Right.
Take a piss on him and walk out the door. Yeah.
And walk out the door.
Yeah.
So it is the difference between a healthy party and an ideology that's based on there's only one truth within this umbrella and it'll be my truth or nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought that was really brilliant. And I wanted to ask you also to talk about Says Who.
Yeah.
Because I can barely talk about it, as you know.
Yeah.
This Trump surrogate was on CNN.
Michael Cohen, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's also the guy who fell into it when he said, you can't rape your own wife, talking about Donald Trump.
Right.
And the fact that you have to say that about your candidate says volumes. But anyway, he was on with a CNN reporter, Brianna, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten her last name, who was saying, you know, you're losing. She said that.
Yeah.
And he says, says who?
Says who?
And he keeps interrupting. Who? He keeps interrupting her. You're says who? Says who? And she says, poll. Says who?
Is it which polls? All of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
And it is a practice called gaslighting, where you push and push and push to make the other person feel that they must be crazy.
Right.
You know, it's an Ingrid Bergman movie called Gaslight, where her husband, played by Charles Boyer, makes her feel like she's losing her mind. Mm-hmm. And it's a form of abuse.
It is. Absolutely.
And everything I've read about it just makes my stomach churn because for all kinds of reasons, and I don't need to go into them. But Says Who then became a very funny hashtag on Twitter. People said that this was akin to Sarah Palin saying that she reads all of the magazines, you know, that he's just in denial about the polls. I guess I've said everything we need to say about this, about it.
I would say that my take on this would be not perfectly appropriate metaphor. I would direct people's attention to a movie from 1967, A Guide for the Married Man.
Oh, yes. Which there's not a good video of this. The video you have and run at your blog is
imperfect.
Is imperfect.
But it's Walter Matthau and Robert Morse. And Walter Matthau wants to cheat on his wife and wants to learn how to do it. And Robert Morse is going to tell him how to cheat on your wife and get away with it. There's tricks. There's things you need to know. It's very complicated. It is a horribly sexist movie. Mm-hmm. Start to finish. This is straight out of Don Draper's Mad Men America. But there is a scene that I've used over and over again. And this is because it goes back for, you know, to 1994, before that. Mm-hmm. A strategy Republicans employ, which our method of journalism in this country is completely unable to cope with, is to just lie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene with
Joey Bishop.
Joey Bishop.
Yeah.
And Joey Bishop and Robert Morris is telling Walter Matthau, you know, what if you get caught? He said, deny it. But what? Deny it. But what if? Deny it. Just deny it. Just keep denying everything. And there's a scene with Joey Bishop and his wife walks in and Joey Bishop is in bed with a woman in their marriage bed in their house.
Naked.
Well, I assume so.
Yeah,
it's 1967, so pretty damn naked from the rear for 1967. Yeah. But it is as busted as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And she drops, I believe the actress was the woman who played Millie Helper, mm-hmm, on the Dick Van Dyke Show. She drops her purse and says, Walter, whatever his name was, how could you? What? What are you doing? What? This woman. What woman? This woman in my bed. What bed? And he just.
And in the meantime, the woman is getting her clothes and
she's
leaving.
She's getting dressed. He's getting dressed.
She's not saying a word. She's just leaving.
She's just leaving. And he's just saying, what bed? What woman? What are you talking about? What's going on? No, nothing's here. Nothing. What are you? That's insane. What are you talking about? And deny, 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 deny. And the woman just walks out. He sits down in his chair, lights up a pipe and says, what's for dinner? And anybody.
She asks him what's for dinner at the end. His wife said, what do you want for dinner at the end? Because he has convinced her that she didn't see what she just saw.
And that is played for laughs, but that is hideously abusive behavior.
Yep, yep, it is.
It comes
and
from
when,
a place
when you're
dominance.
Denied truth, when you're lied to, and this is what where we have to get with our media, is we have to get to the point where lying is seen as rude rather than calling out lies. Because at this point, with the both-siderism, you have to let one person say their truth and the other person say their truth, and then you go to commercial.
Right.
And one of them is lying, and that always benefits the liar.
Right. As Rick Perlstein said on the radio, when you have a situation where both sides are equally punished, both sides are blamed for everything that one side does, you're structurally advantaging the people who do the lying.
Right.
The people who want to break the government and want to wreck everything and want to see other people suffer and want to see it all burned down are delighted every time David Brooks or Michael Gerson or Kathleen Parker or E.J. Dionne or Ron Fournier looks at a Republican catastrophe and says, well, you know, it's the government. It's everyone, really. It's both.
Washington.
Sides.
It's the mess in Washington.
It's the corrupt duopoly.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's one party putting sugar in the gas tank. It's one party slashing the hoses while the other one's trying to put the goddamn fire out. And and the great and vexed question that we who live in the cornfields of America, we who live outside of the bubble have, is how on God's earth do you get through to the Chuck Todds of the world or the Rachel Maddows of the world?
Mm-hmm.
How do you pry? Where's the crack in the bubble into which you can stick the jaws of life and pry it open and either find out they're completely corrupt or that they are completely beholden to people who pay their mortgage?
Mm-hmm.
Because it cannot possibly be true they don't know what they're doing. It cannot possibly be true that they can look at one Republican catastrophe after another and say, well, you know, it's the corrupt duopoly.
No,
there is
they're not saying that beside, by themselves, right?
No, there's obviously a profit motive going on and a political motive going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that is vexing, I have no answer to this question because I've been beating my head against this wall as every other liberal blogger and every other liberal writer and every other liberal podcaster, is we can't get a single fucking straight answer from anyone in the media, from the lowest person in the media, who will say, yeah, Chuck Todd's a lying shitbag.
Yep.
And of course he knows better. Of course he's an entertainer. Here's the size of his paycheck. He knows what he's doing. It tears him up inside to wreck this country by putting these assholes on television every week. But what's he going to do? Someone's going to do it, and he might as well, you know, get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one at no point. And this is what's so completely surreal about this. The one business that is in business to tell the truth, to drag these secrets to the light, is the business that is so corrupt that it will not talk about its own failures, even when those failures are blindingly obvious. When you have Joe Scarborough and Bill Kristol waving their dicks at each other on television. When that's what's going on there, you desperately need some other media mechanism to look at that and say, holy shit, that's broken. Mm-hmm. I wonder why Phil Griffin keeps putting liars on television. Yeah. I wonder why Jeff Zucker keeps allowing Trump liars on television. Does anybody have Jeff's number? Does anybody have Phil's number? Can we get his assistant on the line and talk to him? Can we interview him for 5 minutes about the business sensibility he has that leads him to let these congenital liars and bullshit artists on television for 3 hours a day? What you thinking there, Phil? And there is literally no one I know of who can even get your favorite liberal person on television to whisper about this.
Mm-hmm.
The quietest backroom. They will occasionally retweet something that you write. They will occasionally bump something in the right direction. But they really do operate. And since the problem is the media, since the problem really is, we will not turn the cameras on the Trump supporters and say, once and for all, these scumbags are what's fucking up our country. And mm-hmm. anyone who tells you otherwise is lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've long since passed the point where we have to agree the media is the problem.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones through whom the lies are filtered. They're the ones who are the gatekeepers. They're the ones mm-hmm. who let Ron Fournier go on and on about how both sides are terrible. And won't allow anyone anywhere near him who will ask him the obvious question, what the fuck are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what exhausts me, really.
And
it wears me down because at some point we were having a conversation, you and I and Junior Dude,
mm-hmm.
about living in New York and living in Washington, D.C. and living in Los Angeles.
And why you have to do that to be a quote-unquote success, and have access to the television screen,
And way back at the beginning of the internet, blogging internet, we had this fantasy among the bloggers that this would democratize things.
And I wonder if it isn't democratizing things that we do have, in some respects, with social media, a way of clapping back, particularly about issues of race
mm-hmm.
and class.
Yeah.
Something happened. There's two things I want to talk about before we quit.
Sure.
One that kind of blew my mind, and I learned about it on Twitter. I learned about the results of it on Twitter. The Department of Justice today announced that they are no longer going to use private prisons.
I heard that. I was delighted to hear that.
Delighted to hear that.
I didn't read the small print, but...
Well, one of the small prints that I didn't realize, and I'll hat tip Ian Millhiser again, because I was in his Twitter stream to read what I read before, private prison contract stocks dropped 40% today.
Oops.
Why does Barack Obama hate Wall Street?
I know.
Right? Why does he hate the economy? Why does he hate investors? And these are people who invested in human suffering
right.
for the sake of saving tax dollars. And it blows my mind that there is stock in companies that put people in prison.
I know.
And that we don't, I mean, I have no words.
Well,
I have no words about this.
It's Kurt Vonnegut. I hate
it. It's Kurt Vonnegut. It is. Well, and Neil Millhiser said, please tell me more about the corrupt duopoly.
Yeah.
In that here you have one party deciding, no, this is a moral issue. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And that is the thing. That is the difference in faith-based, right?
Mm-hmm.
I read a wonderful description of Methodism today at Daily Coast, and I want to hat tip Bethesda, our friend Bethesda, who we met at Netroots Nation.
Okay.
I can go look it up. He was just talking about how, he's not religious. He was not connected in any way to Methodism, but the scientific cold stare realism of we are here to serve and we are here to make the world a better place. These are not the words he was using, but it was clear, on earth, put your feet on the earth and get to work.
Yeah.
And look where there are opportunities to make things better. And that's your job. And that has a faith component to it of your being. It is demanded of you by your higher power to do that. But it is your feet are on the ground. You're looking at a problem. You're not saying, well, what do I want to be true about this? Let's write a poll and make something up and then decide that that's really what's happening. No, the problem, you know, the water in Flint has lead in it. Let's fix it. The prison situation is untenable. Let's fix it.
And immoral.
And immoral. Let's fix it. And let's take human steps to do that. Let's not pretend for 30 years that climate change isn't happening because we don't want to change our driving habits or we don't want to change our fossil-based investments. You know, that this is a moral issue. And so I lost my words over this.
Yeah.
And yet here's the corrupt duopoly. This is not both sides, folks. And reality has a moral component that commands us to face it and make it better, face the world and make it a better place. And that's that. The other thing I wanted to talk about, though, is the extent to which this lying to yourself becomes incredibly subtle.
Mm-hmm.
The more in denial you are that that's what's happening.
Yeah. Tell me
and
about it.
The Baltimore Sun had an op-ed in it this week from a lifelong Republican who wrote the speech that the Benghazi mother gave at the Republican National Convention. This is the speechwriter, not Michelle Obama.
Right.
This is a speechwriter for the Republican Party who wrote the speech that was read by the Benghazi mom at the Republican National Convention. And he wrote an op-ed, Richard J. Cross III wrote an op-ed saying that he cannot vote for Donald Trump. And the reason he cannot vote for Donald Trump has to do with whether Muslim Americans are an equal and welcome member of the American constituency. And for him, the answer is a clear yes.
Yep.
And thus far, we are in complete agreement.
Couldn't be clearer, right.
Couldn't be clearer, ready to go. Great. He also says great political leaders help us transcend our fears. You know, you fear some. He says fear sometimes wins you elections, but it doesn't create jobs, build schools, reduce crime, or improve the quality of life for all citizens. Hey, you know what does that? Taxpaying citizens of the United States do that, who apply themselves to a problem that needs to get fixed and see it and try to fix it. And so
I don't know. I think we should try this fear. I think we should try this fear thing a while longer. Yeah, just to see. You know, it's like supply side economics. Yeah, it's been a horrible disaster so far, but maybe.
Well, you know, create jobs, build schools, reduce crime, and improve the quality of life. That might increase my taxes.
Yeah.
Well, and that is the only thing the Republican Party actually stands for is tax cuts for billionaires. But I want to get to the sentence, the razor in the apple. You always say there's a razor in the apple.
There's always one there.
There's always one there. And this is so beautiful. I read this to you yesterday. He says, are Muslim Americans an equal and welcome member of the American constituency? For me, the answer is a clear yes.
Yeah.
Now the question becomes, can we come together and find a positive solution to the issue of illegal immigration?
Or can we, blue gal?
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like President Reagan?
Yeah.
And congressional Democrats were able to achieve? The answer to that is, we must. Now, there are two things wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
One is, Ann Coulter calls President Reagan's and the congressional Democrats' illegal immigration reform amnesty.
Uh-huh.
And actually, to a large extent, it was amnesty.
Yeah, it was.
He was helping his farm friends in California get a lot of cheap labor quickly.
His agricultural buddies that bankrolled a lot of his political career needed cheap labor. So, hey, let's give them amnesty. Great idea. And we can write it off as being humane.
Yep. And the second thing is, as you reminded me, and I hate to say it, I had forgotten, there is an immigration bill sitting in the House of Representatives for 3 years.
Yes.
Right now.
Right this. You could do this right now. Now, let's go to the House of Representatives and poll people and find out who's for it and who's against it. Oh, wait a minute.
And Obama's already said he'll sign it.
Dude, bring it tomorrow. Bring it on vacation. I'll sign it on the golf course. I'll sign it.
Electronically.
I would like to point your attention to another razor in another apple.
Okay.
Just really quickly.
This is our last one.
Okay. You pointed me to this Politico story called the Tea Party, you know, the Tea Party's death of ideas or something like that.
There's so much in there that we could unpack. We could have done a whole show on
right.
this.
And it's very short. And let's do the maybe next week. How we killed the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. But I read through it, because this is a person saying, yeah, I was part of the, basically the lawyer and consultant class that bled these idiots dry. You know, we sucked out all their money, we took all their shit, and we shipped it off to our candidates, and none of it ever was ever used for any political purpose. It was all because we'd slap the word freedom and liberty and patriot on a bunch of mailers, and these chumps would give us their money.
Yeah. But, and it was anti-Obama, and we paid ourselves $15,000 a month, and it all went to, you know, the executive director to raise awareness of the terrible, terrible Kenyan usurper,
right,
who's destroying our freedom. Yeah.
And send out more mailers to more.
And he calls it a transfer of wealth.
Sure. And it was.
From stupid Southerners and rural Midwesterners,
yeah,
to us.
But,
right?
Here's the razor. And again, this is
there, what, there were, yeah, so many razors in this apple, but you tell me which one you found.
Yes. Halfway through, which is where most razors are found.
Mm-hmm.
Any postmortem should start with the fact that there are always two tea parties. Okay, that's true, says Drift Class. There was a small libertarian tea party that was around for a really long time. There was this large Republican rebranding scam,
mm-hmm,
that began on Fox News with a lot of money from the Koch brothers front organizations, so that a bunch of Republicans could wear funny hats and get off the hook for being assholes and liars and hypocrites for during the 8 years that they had supported George Bush. So there were two tea parties. One was a little libertarian one, and one was the big marketing scam where a bunch of Republicans wanted to get out of any responsibility for all the shit they'd done.
Right.
But those were not the two tea parties he was talking about. The first were people who believed in constitutional conservatism, Blue Gal. The folks sense this country that they will leave their children and grandchildren is a shell of what they inherited. And they had little confidence the Republican Party could muster the courage to fix it. Second were lawyers and consultants who read the 2009 political wins and saw a chance to get rich. No! There were lawyers and consultants who ripped off these chumps, but the chumps who flooded into the streets and called themselves Tea Parties were all fucking Republican. And that's what even this person in the middle of his confession cannot confess. The Republican Party has been this way for as long as anyone can remember.
Right.
My entire adult life. And that is the terrible, terrible truth that they can't talk about. Which brings us to the very, very end, which is my contention. This election will be actually more accurate than the census.
Yes.
It will give
us
a much more accurate count of this country in the census. Because really, if you vote for Donald Trump, you are, in my estimation, completely beyond redemption.
Mm-hmm.
So we will know, come election day, how many people voted for the Libertarian Party. Because those are mostly Republicans who are desperate not to vote for Donald Trump and need to park their vote somewhere, and libertarians. Then there are the people who vote for Donald Trump, who are the racist, ignorant scumbags who've been at the base of the Republican Party for all this time. And the Republican Party has lied about for so many years. And then there'll be people who aren't crazy, who will probably vote for Hillary Clinton, who might not like it, will probably hold their nose in a lot of cases, but will go, you know what? Between an absolute orange Hitler lunatic and Hillary Clinton, I'm going to take Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to go in and vote with a clear conscience. And then you will get the 50% of the electorate who are completely unaware there's an election going on at all. And that will sort us out, because then we can really look at each other honestly, because you were talking about putting your feet on the ground and looking at problems and rolling up your sleeves. The Trump election really is the last gasp of white supremacist racists in this country finally dropping their mask.
Yeah.
And saying, yeah, we're fucking Nazis. Yeah, we're fucking racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're skinheads. Yeah, we're the last rump. Let's square off and have a fight. The last remnants of the racist American past versus the American future. And let's have that election, because I think our odds are pretty good that we're going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Jill Stein. She didn't get on the ballot in Georgia.
I know.
She missed the deadline.
You know,
okay.
We all agree. If we had a parliamentary system, this would be a very different conversation.
Yeah, it would.
Where you have coalition
government.
Bernie
Sanders said that this week. Bernie Sanders said that this week. Yeah, he did.
But we don't. We don't have that system.
Yep.
If you would like to, if you've got a plan to change it, that'd be terrific. But we don't have that system. Right now we have a system where one party takes all. And if your entire strategy is We have no Dan ballot anythings. We have no senators. We have no congressmen. We have no governors. We have no mayors. But we're going to have the White House. That's going to be a very short and unpleasant four-year term.
Yep.
Because ain't nobody going to work with you because you have no party to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish you did. And I wish you luck.
All right. Thank you very much, Dirk Glass.
My pleasure.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
I love you.
I love you, too. And let's get out of here and go to dinner, shall we?
We got to put some food on some family.
Yeah, I got to take my wife out to dinner.
Thank you very much. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Fiorello, or Fio. And Fio, the person that sent us Fio wants us to know, he used to be an outside cat. He was adopted from an alleyway, and he still retains his hunter instincts. They call opening the window in the living room turning on the entertainment system.
This program is awesome.
You can go visit Fio at our website or Facebook page. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go, Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And that means contributing $5 to our PayPal account.
Yeah.
Don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. And we did hear from our friend in Mexico, who is such a constant supporter, Lee.
Uh-huh.
Lee in Mexico wrote us and said, you know, I'm glad you reminded us that it was your silver anniversary because I need dishes. He said, and I ordered them off of your website, and I didn't go to Amazon Mexico. I actually went to Amazon US and had them shipped so that you would get a cut. And it doesn't cost him anything to do that, right?
Right.
We get a portion of that if you go through our website, and it really does. And you know, we don't pay ourselves a $15,000 a month salary and pretend that we're supporting freedom. We're paying our electric bill with that money, and we're not shy about it.
But as Bill Murray said in Stripes, but we're willing to learn.
We're willing to learn to earn $15,000 a month from this podcast. Sure. Dare to dream. All right. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftless, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Galley, Internet Kitties are looking forward to the Judean People's Front Town Hall meeting on CNN in December.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the humping and the popping and the loving, lovey, dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Glass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Drift Glass.